welcome to the Road to Genome podcast. I'm your host, Helen Bethel, genetic counsellor and workforce development and education lead for the North East and Yorkshire Genomic Medicine Service, or GMS. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Denise Barnes, who also works within NEY GMS. So thanks so much for joining us, Denise. Lovely to see you.
Hi, Helen.
Hi. So can you tell me then, what is your current job title?
So I'm employed as the lead midwife for genomics for North East and Yorkshire GMSA.
Okay. And what does that mean in real terms then?
It means quite a lot, I hope. It involves me being a project lead for midwives on the transformation project occurring across North East and Yorkshire. And that's looking at equity of access to the perinatal genomic services across North East and Yorkshire. And a first attempt really to try and understand what's happening in maternity care for that side of things. And then I also try and create awareness amongst maternity care for genomics and how that impacts into maternity care.
And how is that kind of awareness raising going? Are people interested when you talk to them on the shop floor about genomics?
They are interested. It's trying to make it relevant to them in the maternity care that they're providing. There's lots of challenges in maternity care at the moment with staffing and extra pressure on the staff. So it's really important for them not to feel like something's being done to them and that genomics is being pushed onto them. This is just a way for them to be able to enhance the care they're providing to the families they're looking after.
And I hear that in line with what our other guests have talked about, you know, kind of trying to introduce it in a way where, you know, when there's pressures on clinical staff, then it can be difficult to encourage staff to find that time for that development to bring it into their practice. So it kind of echoes that as well. So when you were a child, Denise, was this exactly what you wanted to do?
No, I actually wanted to be a physio and explored that and applied for that after I did my A-levels, but I didn't get the grades for the physio. It was quite competitive, as is midwifery, but I then had to explore what else I could do within the healthcare setting. I knew I wanted to work within the NHS. I felt that was quite a respected role, and I then explored nursing and midwifery and got the acceptance on the place for the midwifery course before I got my nursing place. So that's literally how I ended up in midwifery.
Really? So it was literally by chance. And that drive to work for the NHS and within healthcare, where does that come from? Is it in the family?
I don't actually know. I think it's probably my personality that suits working within the NHS. I think, you know, having that drive to improve healthcare and explore how healthcare works, that's what I've always been fascinated with and still am, I think.
Fantastic. So going from being an 18-year-old and falling into midwife because it was the first one that fell into your lap to where you are today. What was that journey like?
So when I qualified, I worked as a rotational midwife. I've always worked at Leeds. I qualified and came straight to Leeds. And for the first sort of 10 years or so, worked around the wards, on antenatal ward, delivery suite, postnatal ward. I was always probably drawn to the more difficult conversations during pregnancy. So I didn't work in the routine low risk areas. I tended to work in the high risk areas and became very good at having those difficult conversations and those more challenging conversations with families. I didn't shy away from them, and that really then helped me to develop more skills in that area. So when I was looking at more specialist roles, I then started to look at screening and providing the options of having testing during pregnancy and supporting families to make those really difficult decisions and unexpected decisions that they didn't actually think they were going to have to make. So I worked as a screening deputy for about 3 years and got loads of experience with a really good team there that helped me develop those skills and also make connections, not just within the NHS, but what other external resources we can use to help support families during that time. And then was really fortunate to get appointed as a fetal medicine team leader, which I did for 5 years in Leeds. And that was a fantastic role. That's sort of where my heart still is, I think. I inherited a fax machine and a paper diary and filing cabinets, and it was literally me and this tertiary fetal medicine centre from a midwifery perspective, and was very, very well supported to develop a midwifery team within that because the women needed that care. You know, the consultants provided fantastic information and care during the appointments, but the women and their families needed to come back to somebody and make sense of what they'd heard and what their options were. And then I then very quickly needed to upskill myself in what their options actually were and what, you know, testing was available, what the limits of those tests were, and how to support them to make decisions that were right for them. So, quite a varied career, but I was always drawn to the more challenging areas of midwifery, I think.
Yeah. So within that journey then, can you pinpoint or remember the moment where you first heard genetics or genomics mentioned?
Genetics has always been part of midwifery care. So as a student midwife, you learn about genetics, you learn about patterns of inheritance, we talk about hemoglobinopathies. So midwives are quite familiar with that term anyway. That's not new. The term genomics, I think, came to me working in fecal medicine and the expansion of the prenatal invasive testing options, and how you can just go from literally counting chromosomes and looking for extra bits and missing bits to actually understanding the DNA and reading that DNA. And then that can then give the opportunity of more diagnosis, but also then the opportunity of still uncertainty because it don't always get a diagnosis, and also how they deal with that information. So, yes, I think it's evolved in maternity care, genetics into genomics. And I think sometimes we're a bit scared of the word genomics because we don't understand it, but it is just adding to that picture that we already know.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned about the changes that have happened. So thinking through from when you first entered the profession to, I know you're not working clinically at the moment, but the clinical role of a midwife now, how do you see that has changed?
It's changed massively. I think the demands as a midwife are huge. The risk of litigation is huge. And I think we take the job very seriously, even though we always strive to do the best care for the women and the families. I think the pressure is increasing now on maternity care. And I think that's what I'm so mindful of doing this job, is I'm not here to say you need to do genomics as part of your maternity care. I need to support you to help that evolve as part of your maternity care, because we're all striving for the same thing. It's just weaving genomics into that drive, I suppose.
Yeah. So from your clinical work, can you think of a case, maybe the first one or one that stayed with you, that kind of significantly involved a degree of genomics or genetic?
There's a few, and I think because I was allowed to expand that midwifery role, the care I could provide grew as well. But one of the tipping points, I suppose, was we, as fecal medicine midwives, we always saw the families if they picked up an unexpected scan finding at their dating scan or their anatomy scan. So we were like the first point of contact. And a family had an unexpected scan finding of a larger than expected head circumference, which could be just a variation of normal, could be familial, but could have been genetic, but the suspicion wasn't that high at that point. So we supported that family to have more scans, trying to find out the reason. But as we looked after them and provided that continuity of care with the consultant and myself, the scan pictures changed and the concern increased during the pregnancy because more unexpected scan findings were found. And that then gave us more of a suspicion that this could be more of a genetic condition. And so they had an invasive test sort of later on in their pregnancy. And the first part of the test came back that, you know, wasn't Down syndrome or Edwards syndrome or Patau syndrome. So that ruled those conditions out, but it still didn't give us a diagnosis. So they were able to be offered whole exome sequencing because the picture of the scans fitted the criteria that with the National Genomic Test Directory. So trying to explain that to a family that we can do another level of testing when they think they've just had genetic testing and everything's okay was really difficult. And also trying to avoid the word normal, because there's no such thing as normal with anybody, you know, who's to say what's normal. And especially in genetics, I think families expect the test, if it's come back as nothing found, that means there's no genetic change, and that's not the case. So that really increased my knowledge as to how to support families and manage their expectations of what to expect from the results from the test. So this family were offered whole exome sequencing and it came back with a genetic diagnosis. Because these conditions are rare, there's limited information as to what that condition could mean for their baby. However, it was a spectrum of learning disabilities and other things like that. So they made the really difficult decision to not continue with the pregnancy. So I supported them from that initial diagnosis of the 20-week scan all the way through to not continue with the pregnancy. So that was quite challenging, I think, and but rewarding in that weird sort of way that you feel like actually I've made a difference for that family.
Yeah.
I've helped them make the decision that was right for them. Mm-hmm. And they came back. So they came back with the next pregnancy, and we were able to provide, you know, the reassurance hopefully during that next pregnancy. But that last baby never leaves. So it's always part of their, well, you know, we thought we would only, you know, 1 in 100 chance of it being a condition. They always feel like they're going to be that one. So it's been able to provide support as well.
Yeah. And what an incredible role midwives play in that journey, say, on those really difficult journeys. So thank you so much for sharing your experience of that. It's great to hear it. So thinking now then again about your current role. So which bits of your role do you most enjoy?
I most enjoy meeting midwives face to face or virtually, because we live in a virtual world now, don't we? Sadly. And when I'm talking to them about genomics and an area of genomics that fits in with maternity care, when you see that realization go over their face and they go, oh, right. It's just adding to what we already know.
Yeah.
They just think it's something that's completely alien and not really relevant to them a lot of the time. But it's really rewarding to see midwives now recognizing how significant genomics can be for the families they're looking after.
Yeah, that's great. And are you having much response of that over the region, or is it still quite patchy?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's my job's a huge reach, you know, working for the northeastern Yorkshire, it's a huge area to cover. And to actually make eye contact with those midwives in every single trust is quite challenging.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is to be more approachable, work flexibly. We've set up a regional midwives in genetics and genomics network meeting. That happens every quarter. And that allows midwives to join that are just interested in genetics and genomics. There's no KPIs to complete. There's nothing that they need to do in preparation for it. They can just come, listen to the conversations that we're having, and just, you know, generate more interest in it. So there's, you know, we've got to adapt to what midwives need. I can't expect them to leave their work area for 3 hours on an afternoon when they've got clinics and everything else going on. So it's just trying to get that reach as much as we can.
And it's great that you've got, you know, such a strong background as a midwife, so that you understand completely that clinical pull, because I'm imagining that in a similar scenario you very much would have chosen your clinical work over a meeting. So it's amazing that you've got that kind of that background and experience to know what those midwives are going through on the shop floor. So then on the flip side, what is the most challenging element of your work?
I think it's quite an isolating role sometimes. I think working regionally, you don't have a link anywhere in particular. I'm used to working in a really dynamic team, which we are in the GMSA as well, but having that physical support of people and eye contact with people. So I find it quite hard to just look at someone on Teams and feel as inspired and motivated as I would do by meeting people face to face. I think that's the hardest thing, because as midwives, you provide direct care. You look at people and you also react to that problem there and then. We're very reactive as clinicians. So, you know, if a baby needs to be born, we need to deliver that baby thing. Whereas in this role, we go, oh, well, maybe do we need to do that? Have we got a bit more time? Can we think about that? Can we plan it? Can we scope it?
Yeah.
So I think I find that different way of working a challenge sometimes, because I'm used to reacting.
Very different pace.
Yeah, totally. I think it has changed me doing this role. I think I have allowed myself to sit back and think and plan and which you can't do as a midwife very often.
Do you miss the clinical work?
Oh yeah of course.
You're so passionate about it. I kind of knew that answer. So what's a typical day for you like at the moment then? So certainly not one where there's a labour at any given moment.
no so I think typically I would spend a lot of time on my computer. It would be checking my emails, getting excited if somebody responds that I've been emailing for the last 3 months and they've actually had time to respond, which then is great. We do a lot of Teams calls, trying to work around people's availability, and also we've got the transformation project work going on now, so that's been really nice because we're linking in with two of the trusts in our area to understand a little bit more what the challenges are for them to embed genomics into the maternity care. So that's been really good for me to keep grounded and still keep an appreciating what midwives are, what the challenge for midwives actually is, and also then being able to look from the outside and say, well, have you thought about this? Maybe could we, you know, use some of the resources and learning that we had from the previous projects to help support you increase awareness in the staff or increase patient awareness? So, yeah, it's quite a nice mixture of a role because I don't just have to spend my whole time on a computer. I can then reach out to midwives across the region as well.
Yeah. And when you mentioned about that kind of excitement when you finally get that email back for someone you've been trying to reach out with, it's a theme that's running through a lot of the interviews that us as GMS staff have given, is that, you know, that networking can take so much effort and feel so futile. But then when you just get that one email that just drops in the right space and it just kind of connects the dots. It's tireless work, isn't it? but it does. It is rewarding when those come. So early in your career, you realise that you don't shy away from difficult conversations, that you actually kind of really enjoy that element of and the challenge of the work. Why do you think that is?
I think I've always seen midwifery as information providing and support. And I think whether that information is expected or not expected, we still need to have that same level of conversation with the family. It's not comfortable because sometimes you feel emotional when you're having those conversations and you feel really sorry for the families to be telling them. But what's really key is that that doesn't come across, that you put it across in a very sympathetic manner. But, and I think I was very good at that, I was able to then explain things and also listen. So being able to give personalised care, which is a term that's bandied around in midwifery all the time, means listening to what's important to that family. And I really enjoyed creating care plans with that family by understanding what was important to them. So I felt that their care was better because I spent the time working out what was right for them with them. And it's sort of, we was trying to avoid that non-directive counselling, don't we? Because it's got to come from the family. But these families are lost. So they come expecting the scan to be absolutely fine and finding out if it's a boy or a girl. And then they go and see the fecal medicine midwife and down in the SAD room, because that's the counselling room, and their world is turned upside down. So it's so important. And we're really good as midwives at giving them time to reflect on what's just happened, what's important to them, and then leading their care based on what they tell you. And you can only do that when you understand what care is available. And that's why I loved the fecal medicine part of it, is because I started to understand, actually, genomics is really helpful for some families, but it also doesn't always give all the answers. So my job was really much about preparing them for that uncertainty, as well as the potential of getting a diagnosis.
Yeah. So it sounds as though you really knew the true value that a midwife could bring in those scenarios.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you had the skills that you need to deliver that in abundance, Denise, in being able to have the privilege of travelling with those patients on that difficult journey, but being able to support them and, as you say, try and cushion it as much as you can for them.
Yeah, and that's something that's not taught. I think that's something you get exposed to in different roles in midwifery, and you either go with it and learn by your mistakes. Like, I've made so many mistakes counselling families, and even like ringing up someone to discuss a result, I didn't check where they were. So I just started going in and saying, oh, hi, it's Denise. I'm ringing to talk about a high chance screening result. And this poor woman was on a train, and you're oh, my goodness, I would never do that again. So, you know, the impact of these things, although not huge, you've got to be really mindful of who you're contacting and when. And some, not linked to genomics, but I've, in my screening role, I gave three new diagnoses of HIV to pregnant women. And that was really interesting. Like, I learned so much with that. The impact on the family, the expectation that it was a death sentence having this HIV diagnosis. So understanding what they thought they knew about that condition already. And then being able to lead them into having a baby that was HIV negative, and that it wasn't a death sentence, and if you work with us and we support you, they became to accept their diagnosis and then move that forward. So I don't know why I like it, but I do.
Well, it sounds like you're incredible at it, Denise. I think that's probably why that you've naturally got those skills that can't be taught, but that you've got them in abundance. you can hear it as you talk, like, you know, as you're talking, you clearly are adapted to it. So, you know, some people would hate it and would avoid it completely, but clearly in your training, you've realised, actually, I'm good at this and I've helped these families. And the team have probably gone, oh, you do that one.
Yeah, go on, off you pop. Yeah, yeah. Right behind you, Denise.
Yeah. I'll wait outside with the tissues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's an incredible role. And do you know, so I considered applying for midwifery when I was in doing A-levels and, you know, kind of not sure what to do. But I realised I couldn't handle the fetal death and element side of it at 18. So I thought I might do it at a later stage. But that emotion that you're feeling, I don't think I could have done. So you've mentioned a couple of times about a kind of a nothing found result. Can you just explain a little bit more about that in the context of genomic testing?
Yeah, so when we do genetic or genomic testing, we can do different levels of testing, but I think it probably comes back to where I described as there's no such thing as a normal result or a normal person. There are limits to what we can find in genetic testing. So depending on what the reason for the test is, depends then on what level of testing we do. But even if the highest level of testing comes back with no significant finding, that doesn't mean there isn't anything there. It just means they haven't found anything. And sometimes that's in pregnancy, it's because the scan findings don't correlate with anything that they've found in the genetic testing. It's all still new. So some of the genetic findings that we get now, we don't know the significance of. And to then put that onto a family to say, we found this scan finding with your baby and we found this unusual genetic change, they don't match up together.
Yeah.
How can you expect a family to make sense of that? Yeah. So when we're looking after families, we've got to make sure that the information we're giving is relevant to what we're actually dealing with. And that's not to say we're holding information back. It just means that we manage the family's expectation as to what that test will tell them or not.
Yeah.
And the hardest thing for a lot of families is that area of just not knowing what's going on, sort of left in limbo. So we've had all this genetic testing. We haven't got a diagnosis. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. And that's really hard when they're just left with nothing, I suppose. We've ruled things out, but it's really difficult for them when they haven't had a diagnosis, because the expectation is now, you know, we're celebrating genomics, but actually it still leaves some families with not an answer.
And going back to your answer before, you mentioned about exome testing. Can you explain a little bit for the listener
is? Maybe the scientists are better explaining about it than I am. I try and explain it to families as in another level of DNA testing. So whether we just count the chromosomes, whether we look for extra bits or missing bits, or whether we start to read the DNA, the exome is the protein coding part of the DNA. So that means there's still some parts of the DNA we're not looking at. So it can give us a better diagnostic yield, or, you know, more chance of getting a genetic diagnosis. But still, the next level would be whole genome sequencing, which currently prenatally we're not doing because of the turnaround times. You know, in pregnancy, we need to have results back in a timely manner in case families want to make decisions about that information.
Yeah. And I heard one of our colleagues explain it in like a transport system. So if you think of a rail network system, the exome is the stations, but the genome is all the bits that connect it together. So yes, the stations are very important, but you also need the other rail bits in between and all the signals and all the other bits and pieces to bring it together.
Yeah.
So thinking then about the future, Denise, so what do you see as kind of the most exciting bit on the horizon for midwifery?
I think we've got two areas. I think we've got a big research study starting in midwifery across England, which is called the Generation Study. And that's an opportunity to sequence the genome of around 100,000 babies in England and look to identify around 200 conditions that with early treatment can actually make a significant improvement to that child's life. So the opportunity of genomics for that newborn baby is amazing. It just feels really exciting. And the interesting thing from a midwifery perspective would be the consent process and how midwives are then upskilled and empowered to provide informed consent. And informed consent is, pardon the pun, in our DNA. We do that all the time in midwifery.
Yeah, of course.
But the managing the expectations of what these results could give and what they won't give. Yeah. And the time frame of that is going to be really, really important.
It's a real challenge, yeah. And certainly as a genetic counsellor where, you know, consent is part of our bread and butter, like you say, in our DNA. And even I, looking at that conversation, would find it a challenge, as you say, because at one end of the spectrum, it's got incredibly positive outcomes, but there's also a lot for patients to understand and comprehend before consenting with it. So, I take my hat off to the midwives, kind of looking at doing this. So, well done to them.
Yeah. And I suppose the other area that I'm excited about is how the non-invasive prenatal diagnosis area will expand. So we do have that option during pregnancy, because a lot of families, to have an invasive test during pregnancy is just a complete no. You know, the risk of miscarriage is small, but it's sometimes just still not acceptable for families.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So for some genetic conditions, we can do non-invasive prenatal diagnosis, where we take a sample of the mum's blood and look at the fetal DNA, and the opportunities of the conditions that we can then screen for will increase. And I think that will give more options to families. Still expands into having to make more difficult decisions often during pregnancy, but I think the whole gift of genomics is that it gives that opportunity to provide more personalised care and predictive care. And but we still need to make sure that midwives are able to know what the limitations of these tests are, so they can help those families make informed decisions and be that support. And, you know, whatever our opinion is about those conditions, we don't let that come into our work. We just make sure that the families have enough information to make the right decision.
Themselves, And, you know, that science that is behind the non-invasive testing, like trying to pick up that tiny amount of DNA from the baby in the mother's bloodstream is just an incredible development. And, you know, it's what I hear you saying is how pivotal the role is of a midwife in actually bringing that science to a couple who are going through a very difficult journey, and actually having to explain such detailed science to them in order to help inform their decision making is, as I say, such a pivotal role, and particularly like we've discussed already about the pressures that they're under already. So to understand that science, which is developing so quickly and almost weekly, I imagine at some point there's going to be increases in the amount of conditions that do come onto that non-invasive testing list, you know. So at the moment it's quite limited, but, you know, it won't be long before the technology is sufficient enough to be testing for other conditions.
And I think it's important that we don't get too overwhelmed with that opportunity as well, and think you have to understand, you know, the scientific part of it. You just need to know that it's there. And you might not know exactly which conditions we can do NIPD for, but you need to know what your pathway is to link in with your clinical genetics team or your perinatal genomics team, because as midwives, we're sort of gatekeepers of all that information, and identifying the families that are eligible for these tests is the real key for midwives. You don't have to necessarily, it'd be great if we could do the consent and that could expand your role as a midwife. That's really exciting. But really, we all need to know that we can, you know, support these families and what tests are available.
And linking in with those clinical genetic services. That's great. Thank you so much, Denise, for coming and speaking to us. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear about your passion for midwifery. And thanks to you all for listening. If you'd like to learn more about some of the topics that we've covered in this episode, then you can find some relevant links on our website at www.ny-genomics.org.uk/podcasts. Our site also has all our other episodes of our podcast series, which are available as well on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other podcast platforms.